Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson in studio here. And with us on the phone is a dear friend of ours who has been on the program any number of times, Mr. Richard Steenen. Welcome to the program.
Foster, good to be here again.
It's good to have you with us, and thank you for coming in at such short notice. But boy, you know, if anything, this week in cybersecurity has been a boom week in terms of headlines that are out there.
It feels like every week is that way, but heating up, and of course, as one person on Twitter said, it's a amateur mistake to stay up late Thursday night because the big leaks, et cetera, seem to be released Friday afternoon.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, wow. Well, let's start off with maybe something that has hit headlines that a lot of people will relate to, maybe not because of cybersecurity, but because of the headlines around the French presidential election, which is coming up. A very important one for France, and as a matter of fact, for Europe, I think, in general, because of the possibility of somebody who is a very strong right-wing nationalist, Marine Le Pen, becoming the president of France. And what happened apparently was that there was an enormous email dump of not just email, but all sorts of information about her opponent, Macron. Do you want to fill folks in on the details of that?
Yeah, about 45 minutes before the press and candidates were no longer allowed to report on the election Friday evening, somebody dumped about 9 gigabytes of purported emails claimed to have been stolen from Macron. It turns out there's been a lot of analysis, even though the journalists can't report on it, the tech community is all over this. And they've learned over time to look at these dumps to check them for validity, check them for tampering, check them for if they're just collated from other dumps that have happened in the past, see if they're really new. And they're discovering, you know, the dates of these. Some interesting fallout has been that the file structure was put through an Excel spreadsheet that was, on a Russian language computer.
Oh, really?
And there's some tampering of some of the files. Some of the videos, you know, were done in basically computer generated. So it certainly is quickly evolving into suspicion that this is a Russian information operation. A couple of the security vendors, Trend Micro and Flashpoint, have attributed it to the same team, the GRU, that infiltrated the DNC and stole their emails.
The Democratic National Committee, that the dump of the emails the candidate.
From the campaign.
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, from Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, which is still having fallout in our own.
Oh, yes. Lord, yes. But if anything, it would almost seem like, Richard, that this particular dump of information would confirm even more strongly that it was the Russians who were involved in both information hacks.
MOD, modus operandi.
Although some of the information, Richard, isn't was inaccurate. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, are we sure that it came from Russia, or are they being framed because they did it the last time? So now it's easier to blame them.
Now we're going down the rabbit hole as soon as you start talking about the intelligence community and government operations.
Yeah.
It's always who's doing it, right? Yeah,
exactly. They showed it to it.
Yeah, and if I remember right, it was the press was basically saying they were waiting for this hat to fall. They knew that there was going to be a leak. I mean, it's been reported for almost 3 weeks. You know, I wonder if there's going to be another email dump, you know. And they were just waiting for it. The timing's too perfect.
And you remember, I think it was Trend Micro who said that there had been a hack of Macron's or his party's email. And he denied it. He said there had been no hack. And these emails, you know, aren't directly from Macron. So, so far, you know, he was right. And he's already telling several journalists that, or his team is telling journalists that they're going to crack down pretty heavily on Russia when and if they win.
You know what's kind of interesting? I'm sorry, Cal, you had something.
You know, Richard, the question I have for you is this, and it is, back in the 60s, they used to have the big red phone in between Russia and the United States that they could talk on, and that was all encrypted. And did anyone ever crack that? And if they didn't, why can't we use that same basic type of technology to protect email?
Yeah, as far as I know, nobody ever cracked it. We can protect email extremely effectively. The trouble is that the most convenient email is Gmail. And its purpose, you know, the reason it's free for everybody is that Google mines that for information so they can feed you ads, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So they can't make it a completely private email system. But there are email systems that are completely private. I use one that's based out of Switzerland, and I discover how frustrating it is, right? First of all, it's not your email address. So the recipients are going to go, wow, is this really Richard? Because I don't recognize his email address.
Oh, I see.
And then beyond that, if you forget your password, forget it. You know, it's encrypted so that the email carrier can't recover it, yeah, ever.
Wow.
And so you forget your password, and of course you've made it really complicated because it's got to be very secure.
Yeah.
And you forget it, and boom, it's gone for all your emails are gone forever. You got to start fresh every time you enter a new password.
Wow, high price for that. So, what I found interesting about this was that versus Hillary Clinton, where the emails that were revealed were meant to be examined, the exact opposite, at least in the analysis that you passed on to me, the analysis is that this information is not meant to be examined carefully. That it's precisely this enormous dump of information, so you can't make your way through it. What I find, go ahead.
Yeah, so the story isn't as well, taken care of by the information operatives. Mm-hmm. So they just dumped a lot of data in the hope that just the fact that there's a dump will cast doubt, presumably, on the Crohn's party.
I'm curious, is there any other country around on the globe that does this kind of thing where they shut down any kind of media input 2 days before the elections? I think it's brilliant. I wish they would do it in the U.S. 2 months ahead.
I was just going to say 222 days.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly 4 years before the election starts. They should.
Yes.
I agree.
Or I like the British system where it is, you know, you call an election, and then it's within a very short time you have the election. You know, you don't have a lot of time to do this, idiotic campaign.
Well, less expensive. But now we've got the specter of the soon, upcoming elections in Britain as well as in Germany.
That's right.
And Germany's already seeing, Russian trolls and the usual fake news and things like that spreading. So it's going to play out, and it's kind of amazing how audacious the Russians are. It's always a caveat that, it could be third parties pretending to be Russians.
Yeah.
Because, it works, so why not do it while we can? Because over the next decade, right, we'll all get used to this, and it won't be as effective as it has been in the last year.
Mm. So is there among security experts, is there a fairly strong consensus that this is the Russians that are doing this? With the caveat, of course, it could be third parties, et cetera.
Right. But it's very, very strong. Some of the top research teams, the vendors and researchers, have given us the trail of breadcrumbs back to the Russians, back to, in the case of the DNC hacks in our own elections, there were multiple attacks from the GRU, which think of as their CIA, and the FSB think of as their NSA. So two separate teams at one time were attacking the DNC, maybe without the knowledge of the others.
With all the talk going on with the Russians, that sort of thing, what about North Korea? Are those guys doing any hacking toward us in that particular situation, or are they less sophisticated than the Russians?
So they're definitely less sophisticated, right? The Russians are... get to pull on the expertise of their cyber criminal gangs, who are the best, right? It's hands down, no matter who I talk to says the Russians are the best and the scariest. The North Koreans, from a military perspective, are very, very strong. Dedicated teams,
have done some really, really amazing spreads of botnets and harvesting the botnets in order to do DDoS attacks against the U.S. government, against South Korea, infiltrating South Korean banks, and, of course, the now famous Sony attacks that they're credited with.
Yes.
So, yeah, very, very powerful.
Richard Steenen is our guest here. He's the Chief Strategy Officer at Blanco Technology Group, and he's, of course, somebody who's been around the industry for a long time, analyzing security, and he was worked for Gardner for a while as an analyst there, and is also an author. And the book, we've interviewed him a number of times, and one of the interviews we did was with about his book called There Will Be Cyber War. If you're interested in that book, by the way, and some of the things we're talking about, on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, I've got links to the book and also the topics that we've been talking about. We've been talking about the French election coming up, but what I want to talk about in just a little bit when we come back in a moment will be about a new privacy-busting technique that tracks computer users through the use of ultrasonic tones. Apparently the dog can hear it, but we can't. And we'll be back to talk with Richard Steenen about that and other cybersecurity matters as we continue here on the first hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, and the crew with you, Gary and Ed and Cal, and also our old favorite, our friend Richard Steenen is with us as well, a cybersecurity expert, and we're talking about some of the headlines that are up this week about cybersecurity, something that I found absolutely fascinating and wondered if you could help explain it to me, was a headline that said, a new privacy-busting technique tracks consumers through the use of ultrasonic tones. And it may have sounded like science fiction, but it's a reality today. Richard, first of all, have you heard of this? And, you know, is this fake news or real?
Yeah, I've heard of it. As a matter of fact, last conference I was at a big mobile conference in Barcelona. Somebody came across to me and started telling me all about their great networking protocol they had written over ultrasound. So it uses speakers on the device and microphones on the recipient device in order to kind of displace what you would use Bluetooth or Wi-Fi for.
Hmm.
And it fits. So the use of this for tracking, you know, consumer behavior, let's be nice here, it seems to fall right into place because this is a battle that I was involved in way back when I was at Webroot. And so we're eliminating cookies. Remember how upset people used to get about tracking cookies? And, of course, you know, after Google bought DoubleClick, like, we all just gave up and said, okay, I'll live with the tracking cookies. But the industry is, you know, trying to bring us this always-on, always-connected type of capability that they then get retailers to get involved in.
Uh-huh.
There are tools now, there's a whole industry devoted to tracking your presence in a store. And the company will deploy multiple Wi-Fi access points that triangulate your location. So now they know what aisle you're in. And they know if you're dwelling, you know, in front of a certain kiosk, and they could display special ads for you.
No kidding.
And then they'll also be able to report to the retailer if the store salespeople aren't going where the people are, you know, if they're just in the back chatting with each other.
Yeah. In the break room.
You know, it's bad enough when I get a receipt from Kroger or Meijer or Rite Aid, and it's taller than I am in coupons. Now I'm going to get flashes on my phone, and it's going to become just as irritating, but unless there's something rewarding in there for me.
Wait a minute. So if you're standing in front of a product and you're looking at it, and all of a sudden something pops up and says, here, we'll give you more information about it. It's not like you weren't disinterested. You were interested in that product.
Oh, yeah, unless you happen to be shopping with the other half and I'm standing in front of the feminine hygiene product order.
And that goes into Google and tracks you, and you get tracked like that forever. I know.
Those would be some great coupons to get in.
Richard, how do the ultrasonic tones, I mean, the article had a picture of a dog with its ear up in the air. In other words, these are tones we can't hear, right?
Well, this was like Kevin Mitnick being able to set off nuclear nuclear missiles just whistling into the phone, right, Richard? Wasn't that one of the Department of Justice allegations?
You could certainly control phone switches that way, just whistling. Yep. And back in the day when we had phone switches, we weren't all IP. But this new methodology is kind of great, right? So you're clever. From a hacker's perspective.
Yes.
But basically, the idea is, you know, your phone's got an app on it that, of course, asks for permission to use the microphone and the speakers.
Ah.
And then when you're, say, you're browsing to a website and your laptop and your phone's in your pocket, instead of relying on Google or Facebook to track your browsing activity, when you go to a website that emits a high-pitched signal, then your phone picks that up and then reports through the app to the app owner that you're browsing, you know, the website for news or whatever.
Oh, wow. So the point is we should watch the dog. And if the dog starts twitching, we should know that something's going on.
Well, that or dolphins, yeah. If you have pet dolphins. Yeah.
That is fascinating.
Well, the thing is, it also could be used in the store. So as you're walking in a store, or down the street, and you happen to be passing a coffee shop, if that store is emitting ultrasonic through with their music as well, your phone app would pick that up as well.
That would report your location.
Correct.
Yeah.
This sounds to me, though, that there are two things: battery consumption, and these user acceptances. When a person downloads an app, I know I have personally, like, I'm downloading a flashlight app for my old phone because it didn't have the flashlight capability, and I wanted to use the flashes. You know, why would that need access to my contacts? No, I am not I'm not using this app. And I would download a couple different apps, free apps, until I found one that didn't want
to have all the access.
Access to everything, including microphone and speaker and stuff like that.
The difference, though, Ed, is this. You live in a generation that looks at that sort of thing and gives it some second consideration. These new millennials, they don't care. They say, just give me the app. Just give me this thing. Just give me, they've probably never, ever, ever, ever times 10 read one of those disclaimers that said, you know, here's all the things that you're giving up when you say I accept.
So wait a minute. I'm not reading I'm a millennial? Because I haven't read it either. Who has?
You're just ahead of your time, Gary.
Gary wants to become a millennial.
So I sometimes act that way. But
he's got millennials. He's got millennials in the house. That's what's going on.
Well, anyways, it's a fascinating thing with how they're targeting for their market. And so they could target ads at you. And that someone's actually developed a protocol, an ultrasonic protocol for securing information back and forth that, you know, can't be picked up. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Very fascinating.
Definitely.
Hey, but before we, Rich, we don't have an awful lot of time. And as always, we need much more time when we're talking with you. Richard Steenan is our guest here talking about cybersecurity. Could you give us a kind of a thumbnail? And I know that there are listeners who have run into this out there. What's the state of ransomware now? A couple weeks ago, I mentioned the fact on the air that the price of the ransom has tripled since last year. What are some other things that have been going on with ransomware? Is it more prevalent? Are they getting craftier at it? What's going on?
Yes to all of that. It's probably still the highest concern of all the CISOs I talk to, because it's still happening, even though, you know, it's pretty well known how to defend yourself, right? Have backups, have patches, good security, et cetera, et cetera. But it's getting more sophisticated. So there's a ransomware as a service that an attacker can subscribe to called Fatboy that actually prices the, you know, decryption ransom that's asked for based on where the person is. So they're taking you know, demographics and geolocation into account. So it's kind of it's priced to be more affordable, right? So there's a demand curve, and if somebody asks for $1,000, most people are going to go, nah, you know, I'll just live without my documents that I created.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's $49, maybe I'll do that. So you optimize that.
Wow. That is scary. Cal had a question for you.
Is Bitcoin still the choice of payment for that sort of situation? Or if they're paying through more traditional means, how come we can't just trace these guys and say, hey, look, you know, you're... you know, you're running a business that's not correct.
Yeah, it's Bitcoin. And Bitcoin was one of the enablers of this, right? Because it's not completely untraceable, but it's very untraceable. And it's probably the driver for Bitcoin adoption. Think of all those victims that have to get Bitcoin wallets in order to engage in the transaction.
How perverted is that? That Bitcoin is actually benefiting from the fact that it's been made the means of payment.
Well, the other thing, if you think about it, you know, tying back into that ultrasound, they were saying that with this ultrasound app, you can actually remove some of the anonymity with Bitcoin if one of these apps is installed while you're making a transaction with Bitcoin.
Good point.
Very interesting. Gary, were you going to say something?
Get the serial number of the wallet while they're doing it.
Yeah.
Bitcoin itself is just a medium. It doesn't benefit other than more people are circulating it.
That's true.
Is that what you're saying?
The way gold benefits when a mine shuts down, right?
Same right. Thing. Right.
Yeah. Economically, and Bitcoin's at $1,500 a coin right now, so it's almost up. I think it's at its all-time high, so it's very, very interesting times for that. Mm.
And there are a number of other cryptocurrencies as well.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And in fact, there's exchanges now that are exchanging between the two, or between many, right?
And people hedging and doing arbitrage between them, making markets.
Richard,
and by the way, we can't even collect them though. It's not like a Confederate dollar, right? That you collect it, and 100 years from now, it's worth something to a museum.
One really cool thing that happened last week in the ransom business, so it's not ransomware, was that Netflix had the entire season of Orange Is the New Black stolen.
Yes, I saw that.
And a huge ransom asked, to prevent the hackers from releasing Orange Is the New Black, which Netflix hasn't paid, which is a good thing.
And the studios are getting real nervous about that, aren't they?
Sure. As they
Richard.
Should be. But whoever realized that, data hygiene and this, just having really good information management that extends all the way down to your subcontractors who are doing the editing of these things has to be implemented. And
Richard,
kind of
we got to close out right now. Thanks so much for being with us. Richard Steenan, our guest.